Sup, you beautiful bastards. You're watching the Philip DeFranco Show, and we got a lot of news to talk about. We've got people going after Kim Kardashian, Zendaya, and Hailey Bailey. Baby Reindeer's real-life Martha is doing a Piers Morgan interview. We've got huge updates on Micah Miller. And we break down why there's a national controversy around a Picasso in a lady's restroom. And then there's even more, so buckle up, hit that like button to let YouTube know you love these big daily dives into the news, and let's just jump into it.
Starting with,
this is wild. The real-life Martha from Baby Reindeer, not only has she revealed herself, she is going to share her side of the story with Piers Morgan, right? Not the update I thought I'd be giving when we covered this last week, right? And if you're unfamiliar with Baby Reindeer, it's a dark comedy and thriller written by and starring Richard Gadd, and it depicts events that really happened to him, including the fact that he was aggressively stalked by a woman fictionalized in the show as a character by the name of Martha. And with its just absolutely runaway success, what we ended up seeing were a lot of people trying to figure out who the real Martha was, which, I mean, that sparked a controversy of its own, Gadd even telling fans to stop speculating. And while you had places like the Daily Mail saying they were in contact with this person this morning, Piers Morgan revealed that he actually sat down with the real-life Martha, whose name is Fiona Harvey. It's set to air tomorrow, with Piers saying that she wants to, quote, set the record straight. And reports noting that she's a Scottish lawyer who some online detectives did find and identify prior to this. And actually, news about this interview comes a few days after she already revealed her identity to the tabloid The Daily Record, which notably said that Fiona is considering suing Netflix and Gadd and denying the contents of the show, specifically taking issue with the fact that in the show, the Martha character spends time behind bars, which Fiona says is not true about her life, saying, I've not been to prison. None of this happened. It's a load of rubbish. Gadd needs to prove I went to jail, which just didn't happen. I've never been sent to jail. That is blatantly obvious. Police at your door would be the first thing. Then you'd be charged. Then you would have a trial. Then you'd be fined or something, or go to prison. This is all made up and hyperbole. And adding that even though she doesn't have a lot of money, she's willing to take it to court and represent herself since she's a lawyer. Though notably here, in previous interviews, Gadd has suggested that the person he based Martha on never went to prison in real life as a result of the events that unfold in the show. But that's also not the only issue Fiona has taken here, saying her life has become miserable since fans of the show found her, claiming Gadd and Netflix have portrayed this as a true story, and now some little man in North Carolina giving me death threats believes it's a true story. Any semblance of a normal life I had is gone. It's open season on me, and this is my chance to speak out. And as for whether or not her lawsuit against Netflix and Gadd actually has any merit, at the very least, you had a lawyer telling the Daily Record that she could have grounds for a defamation case because the show potentially didn't do enough to conceal her identity. But with that, so far, Netflix has defended itself, with Deadline reporting that a policy chief at the company actually spoke to Parliament today, saying the production took, quote, every reasonable precaution in disguising the real-life identities of the people involved in that story. We didn't want to anonymize that or make it generic to the point where it was no longer his story because that would undermine the intent behind the show. Ultimately, it's obviously very difficult to control what viewers do, particularly in a world where everything is amplified by social media. But for now, that's kind of where we are until this Piers Morgan interview comes out, which notably is already facing backlash, with people accusing him of trying to take advantage of someone who is clearly depicted as mentally unwell. Though personally, I'm going to hold on to my judgment on this one until we actually see what this interview looks like. And then, it's wild how almost every available piece of public information seems to point in one direction, but the reality maybe in the other. Because that is what appears to have happened in the case of Micah Miller, which we covered on Monday. Right, and to briefly recap, her husband, John Paul Miller, who's a pastor in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, announced her apparent suicide at the end of a sermon.
I got a call late last night. My wife has passed away. Yeah.
Right, but just about nobody who talked about this publicly believed him. And that's because seemingly so many signs pointed to him having something to do with her death. From the police declining to release her official cause of death and continuing to investigate what happened to her, to claims from her friends and family that she had been making normal routine plans the whole week before she died and even texted them the night before, to revelations that she had filed for divorce back in October and filed 3 times for court-ordered separation and support from her husband, with the last one coming just days before she died. She also filed for a restraining order against her husband. There were also social media posts that she made seeming to suggest that she was in a dangerous and abusive marriage. There were also police reports revealing that she believed the person who slashed her tires was a redacted suspect who had a history of doing similar things to her. There were also statements in those same reports where she believed she was being followed, that the suspect was harassing her, that she kept getting unknown calls and texts. The mechanics found a tracking device on her car, that she was afraid for her life. There was also a statement from her sister claiming Micah said, if I end up with a bullet in my head, it was not me, it was JP, right, John Paul. All of which is why Micah's friends, family, hundreds of supporters from the community, the media, pretty much everyone thought there was more to this story. But now, according to the county medical examiner and sheriff's deputies, she did take her own life. With the deputies saying John Paul wasn't even in the county on the day Micah died. Right? Apparently, he was at an athletic event in Charleston. And that morning, video captured Micah obtaining the means to take her own life, which I can't get into the details on because YouTube will then suppress this video. But also, we've now learned that that afternoon, right before she died, she called 911 and told them what she was going to do. Right? And so with all of that, it now seems clear cut, but still some of Micah's friends are skeptical. With, for example, Tim Carter telling News Nation, conversation, he has a gut feeling she didn't take her own life and saying, I don't believe it for a minute. As well as Alicia Young telling Fox News, it just makes me so mad. I don't believe it's over. I believe more stuff will come out. It always does. And adding, what pastor gets up in less than 24 hours of his wife's passing to still give a sermon and already has a funeral plan for the following week? Nobody does that. Though notably there, I would say it is possible that both things are true, right? It is possible that Micah took her own life and that John Paul abused her. But if that were the case, even if he didn't go as far as murdering her, that doesn't diminish the harm that he actually could have done to her. Though, of course, with that, John Paul denies those allegations. But with all that said, right, the new information, the case seemingly closed for good, I gotta ask you, what are your thoughts here now? And then we got Kim Kardashian in the news right now, not because she got booed at Tom Brady's roast, and not so much that it was revealed that maybe she has an extreme corseting kink based off of what she was wearing to the Met Gala. Rather, today, it has to do with her comments around Israel and Palestine. Because as she was speaking at a business and marketing conference in Germany, this happened.
It's okay. It's happened at every event I've done.
And so the backlash to that clip and her saying free everybody, it was almost immediate. With a lot of people accusing her of essentially saying all lives matter on this issue. But with that, it's also worth noting that multiple outlets have said that Kim did end up continuing her comments to say, I sympathize with the people of Israel and with those in Palestine. I sympathize with everyone. All we want is for everyone to feel safe and free. You know, with this, you saw people saying things like, the past 7 months has been scientific proof that celebrities are soulless and celebrity culture is garbage. Privileged fucking millionaires who don't give a fuck whether people outside their circle die or live. Also, the situation is actually a little connected to the Met Gala, right, where Kim Kardashian did the magic trick where she made her ribs disappear, right, because it took place in New York, a city that's been full of major student protests that have spawned national conversations. And you may have missed it, but protesters were actually arrested outside of the Met Gala on Monday, with 27 people being taken into custody. But as far as why they largely didn't get attention, you had the New York Times explaining they were kept far enough away from the main event that most people focused on the party didn't even notice. In fact, the outlet also asked, is the Met Gala protest proof? Right, because celebrities, even those who have been vocally supportive, weren't seen wearing as much as a pin in support of Gaza like some have at previous red carpet events. And as far as why that might be, with the Times explaining that a lot of people are just scared shitless of any potential wrath from Anna Wintour, arguing if ever a Met Gala seemed primed to clash with its political moment, it was this one. Though notably, there's a lot of online discourse that has hit that same point. There's some posting photos of stars like Zendaya dressed to the nines alongside photos from the war and comparing it to the Hunger Games. And some even adding, this is your friendly reminder that Suzanne Collins actually wrote the Hunger Games during the Iraq War. The inspiration came to her when she was flipping through TV channels between reality shows and footage of the Iraq War. But you know, with all of that, you also have some saying it seems like the people reacting to the situation, or maybe even the public in general, it seems that they're picking and choosing who to be mad at. Or with people asking, why is almost all the coverage of Jeff Goldblum going to the Met Gala? It's about this flirty exchange he had. Whereas when it comes to the likes of Gigi Hadid or Zendaya going, they're getting called out. And there's been no shortage of that debate, both for famous people as well as online celebrity types. Or with some pointing out that Emma Chamberlain, who not only attended but hosted Vogue's red carpet at the Met, she got almost no heat. Though I will say, the influencer that seemed to get the most heat was, I think her name's Hailey Bailey. She attended the Met Gala in a Marie Antoinette inspired outfit and decided with, or ignorant to everything going on, to use the audio, let them eat cake. Which, to bring us back to the Hunger Games comparison, the number one comment on that video is, watching this from District 12, along with girl read the room, and the fact that she didn't realize this would upset us just makes the metaphor even stronger. But you know, with all that said, I know we covered a few things here. I'd love to know your thoughts on all this.
And then,
yeah, with friends like Chris Gilbert's, who needs enemies? Also, don't worry, there is no reason why before this conversation we're having that you should know who Chris Gilbert is. Right, because Chris, he's just a 26-year-old medical student who's getting ready to return to school to become a doctor, or at least he was, because last month his life took a dark turn. Right, because he went to a lakefront seafood restaurant in Louisiana with some friends, and they're all hanging out on a dock overlooking the lake when Chris apparently falls in, which for most people might mean a broken phone and some wet clothes, but for Gilbert, it means potential death because he can't swim. Right? And so naturally, the thing for any one of his friends would be to jump in and help him, but they don't do that. Instead, you see them in this video just standing there as he lies submerged in the water for more than 10 minutes, with unluckily a stranger from the restaurant diving into the lake and rescuing Gilbert and performing CPR on him, also telling police the man was about 15 feet deep. And Gilbert's mom on KSLA News recalling the moment one of Chris's friends called her.
She told me that Chris had fell into the lake. He had been underwater for 20 minutes or so. And she was just like, oh my gosh, she just kept crying hysterically. And I was like, where is he? He's being airlifted to Shreveport.
So the family rushes to the hospital, and that's when they got the news.
The doctor called us in and told me that at that time that he was brain dead pretty much. And the rest of his organs were starting to fail. and that we had 72 hours.
Now, as far as what happened, Chris's friends initially told police that he just fell face first into the lake, and they thought that he was just playing a prank on them by not resurfacing immediately. But eventually, the cops find out that a woman in the group allegedly pushed him in. And when confronted, she fessed up, but she claimed that it was only horseplay and they didn't know he couldn't swim. And so for a while, it looked like they might have their own friend's blood on their hands. But fortunately, there is a silver lining to this story. Because now, after more than 2 weeks on life support, Chris has made a miraculous recovery. With the family's attorney telling the New York Post that he's eating and talking again, he'll hopefully leave the hospital soon. Though notably, he is still recuperating physically and working on memory loss problems. And so now you have his family and many community members demanding that the police arrest the woman who pushed him in. And with that, claiming that one of the reasons she's not being held accountable is because she is a white woman and Chris is a black man. And this is the family's also planning a civil suit against the restaurant, alleging that it failed to properly restrict access to the lake despite serving alcohol. And so while obviously I would love to know your thoughts here in those comments, I think also there's a precautionary lesson here aside from don't push people into lakes, you idiot. But it's also you deserve good friends, right? I know proximity plays a big factor, but be careful and smart who you pick as friends, right? Because it's those people that are the family that you get to choose in life, and you deserve to have good friends. And then you know, y'all hear me talk about the importance of being and staying healthy. And it's surprising to me how many people don't see a doctor when you probably should. And listen, I get it. Like the time that it takes to get an appointment, it's ridiculous. Or maybe you've never had a doctor that you trust. But thanks to the amazing partner of the PDS, ZocDoc, they understand all your reasons and they're here to help you. Be it that scratchy throat that turns into something more, or that nagging pain that starts to affect the rest of your body. I mean, ZocDoc can help. Because ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you who accept your insurance and instantly book appointments with them online. I mean, we're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. And the typical wait to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc, it's between 24 to 72 hours. Sometimes you score same-day appointments with doctors who have verified reviews from real, actual patients, not bots. Also, this app is so easy to use, and it's not just about finding your general practitioner. ZocDoc finds dermatologists, dentists, psychiatrists, eye doctors. I mean, I could go on. So just go to ZocDoc.com/Phil and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/Phil. ZocDoc.com/Phil. And then, so this museum in Australia just moved a prized Picasso painting into the bathroom. I'll explain. Right, so the Museum of New and Old Art, or MONA, is a museum in the Australian state of Tasmania. And they've been stirring up some controversy because of its ladies' lounge installation by American artist and curator Keisha Keshela. You know, that's because the only men allowed inside are the butlers serving the women who visit it. Also, it's not just a Picasso inside, there are other famous artworks as well. Right, in this, because the whole exhibit is meant to be a work of feminist art in itself. Though, of course, that has not sit well with everybody. And so what we ended up seeing happening is that last year, when a guy named Jason Lau wasn't allowed to enter the ladies' lounge, he filed a complaint with Tasmania's anti-discrimination commissioner, saying that he was discriminated against because of his gender, and saying, I visited MONA, paid $35 Australian on the expectation that I would have access to the museum, and I was quite surprised when I was told that I would not be able to see one exhibition. And one of the interesting things here is that Keshela actually said she agreed with Lau, but she also added that was the whole point, with Keshela actually saying to another man who complained about the exhibit, the exclusion of men is the artwork. And so when this whole thing was finally heard by a Tasmanian court last month, that's actually what her team argued. Her lawyer claiming that the work was necessarily discriminatory and that denying men access to it allowed them to experience it just in a different way. And with that, specifically citing a legal exemption that says that discrimination may be acceptable if it is, quote, designed to promote equal opportunity for a group of people who are disadvantaged or have a special need because of a prescribed attribute. Right, and to that point, the ladies' lounge is said to have taken inspiration from male-only spaces in Australia. For example, Australia only permitted women to enter public bars from 1965 on. And today, you still have a number of elite gentlemen clubs still excluding women from membership. But in the end, we saw the court disagree, and so the ladies' lounge has actually been forced to close temporarily, with the court issuing orders to implement reforms to make it compliant with Tasmania's Anti-Discrimination Act. And so what we're now seeing this week is while the museum also filed an appeal with the Supreme Court, arguing that the tribunal took too narrow a view when examining women's historical and ongoing societal disadvantage, Keshela also announced her strategy of malicious compliance, with one of her workarounds being to move some of the key artworks in the ladies' lounge, including works by Pablo Picasso, into a women's toilet. But notably, that's just in the meantime, because she's actually turning the whole installation into a restroom so that it would qualify for an exemption in Tasmania's Anti-Discrimination Act for the, quote, provision or use of facilities. Where they're saying that a toilet is en route to MONA and will be installed within the coming 45 days, and saying that this will be the greatest toilet and men won't be allowed to use it. Also, on top of that, Keshela is saying that the ladies' lounge will start offering Bible studies in order to meet the exemption for religious institutions, with her ironically highlighting Bible passages like this one from Corinthians, which says, it is shameful for women to speak. And then, as if that wasn't enough, she suggested that the ladies' lounge could meet another exemption by functioning as a school, where they're saying there that they would charge tuition to men. Right? And so with this, for many, including Keshela, you know, they see this as turning the entire debacle into a giant art project. They're even telling the BBC that the high-stakes case made it feel like her artwork was coming to life. And actually, to that point, last month she arrived at court with an entourage of 25 women, all dressed in navy business attire, who entered the courtroom in choreographed fashion, with the men reportedly silently reading feminist texts, posing, crossing their legs, and applying lipstick in unison during the proceedings. And this week, she appeared on Australian News reading the book Men Who Hate Women while being served espresso by a man. And while, of course, I'd love to know your thoughts in general on the situation and the art of it and the argument of it all, the only thing I can really say is I have, regardless of my opinion on whatever, I have a respect for the commitment to the troll here. Like, I didn't know you could be professionally petty as a job. If I knew that was an option growing up, granted, I still may legitimately have had the same job, but maybe I could have gotten to that earlier rather than thinking I was going to be a doctor even though I was too stupid. And then we should talk about Social Security possibly running out of money. With now the Social Security Board of Trustees saying that the timeline to get more money into the program has been extended by 1 year into 2035. However, if nothing's done by then monthly payouts would need to be cut by 17%, which is actually slightly better than the last assessment, which was not only a year earlier, but a 23% cut. Right? Social Security largely relies on its trusts to pay out beneficiaries, and those are financed by things like payroll taxes that you and I cough up every paycheck. And the reason we saw things improve slightly, according to officials, is because of impressive wage growth, historic job creation, and a steady low unemployment rate, which, you know, makes sense. If more people are working, that means more companies and employees are paying payroll taxes into Social Security. But it clearly didn't solve the problem, as there's still a deadline for benefits getting slashed. And one of the reasons the issue is suddenly accelerated is because baby boomers have actually started to retire, which is why administrators over at Social Security are urging Congress to take some kind of action. And it's not just them saying this, right? You have advocacy groups like AARP, with its CEO saying Congress owes it to American people to reach a bipartisan solution, ensuring people's hard-earned Social Security benefits will be there in full for the decades ahead, saying the stakes are simply too high to do nothing. And this is the head of the fiscal think tank Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget warned, every year we get closer to the deadline. We seem to get further away from the solution. Social Security's retirement trust fund will be insolvent when today's 58-year-olds reach the normal retirement age and today's youngest retirees turn 71. And you know, this discussion about how to fix Social Security, it's always been a big one, especially around election years. But this year, I mean, this is going to be when we start to see it become one of the big, big issues as both parties have floated ideas. Right? For Republicans, the big push is to raise the retirement age, with the general argument being that more Americans are retiring as the population ages and fewer people pay into the system while living longer, healthier lives. But that comes with the drawback of current workers getting less money from the system overall, or they work longer, thus having a shorter retirement and less time getting paid out. And so we're seeing Democrats adamant that there are better ways to deal with the problem, preferring instead to go about it by adjusting taxes. Right? In particular, they want to raise the $168,000 salary cap on Social Security taxes. Because currently, with the way that it works, if you make $200,000 a year, none of the $32,000 difference goes towards the program. While just under 10% of Americans make that much or more, that's still a decent number of people, all of which adds up. And so because of that, President Biden actually wants to raise the cap to $400,000 a year. And you can also take almost all the same concerns and arguments and apply them to Medicare, which is also on the calendar to go broke by 2036, which on one hand seems very soon, but also on the other, I mean, it was actually scheduled to hit a wall by 2031. So it's actually been pushed back in the latest report for similar reasons as we saw before. Increased employment means more tax revenue to fund it. And so with this, you know, on one hand, it's going to be very interesting to see how things actually play out and what moves are made. But then there's also the second thing of how much is this actually a motivator when it comes to people voting. Right? If I were to guess, the closer you are to retirement, the bigger a deal this is, especially because if you ask a lot of young people what they think about Social Security, most just don't think that it's going to be there when it's their time. But yeah, I got to pass those questions off to you. What are your thoughts here?
And then
finally today, to end on a light note, I got two things for you. The first is a congratulations and the second is common commentary. So first, got to say congrats to Danielle for being the latest winner of our weekly $500 giveaway towards any tickets on SeatGeek. Right, Danny says he's going to take his four-year-old to Disney on Ice, all because he entered, which is awesome. And for everyone else, that's right. SeatGeek and the Daily Dip are still giving away up to $1,000 in tickets, and you should definitely enter if you haven't already. All you got to do is add code PDS to your SeatGeek app profile for a chance at the weekly $500 prize, no purchase necessary. And $1,000 prizes are available to Daily Dip subscribers who add code PDS newsletter, doubling entries and winnings. But with that said, let's jump into those comments. Starting off with the fact that there was a lot of back and forth regarding immigration, with that connected to what we covered with Moist Critical suing U.S. immigration, as well as those other lawsuits, which included a woman that was trying to get married. With folks like Shane the Bane saying, it's such a crazy defense to say, we didn't deny your right to marriage because you can go to another country. Like, what? You could literally make that defense to trample any right. Our rights are about things we're allowed to do here. Mo Square saying, it's crazy that the U.S. Immigration Office is immune from paying reimbursements, even if you You sue them. And adding, the system is made to be as lazy as possible without any consequences. And some like Abzan sharing their stories, writing, the U.S. immigration system is a joke. It took my case 10 years to process and only got processed the day after I emailed threatening to sue. Even then, I missed so many opportunities in my university because I didn't have my green card that should have been processed 5 years ago. And Anna is sharing, U.S. immigration is so annoying to deal with. I have 3 friends that have been here for years. They work on student visas and are trying to get their work visas. Their lawyers all said they have a great case, they're essential at their jobs, and they check all the boxes, but they're still having problems and have had to reapply. It's insane. And then in addition to that, there were a lot of people chiming in on the global glasses crisis, right, with some sharing how life-changing this stuff can be for such a small amount of money, saying, my wife paid for one of her cousin's eye surgery in Afghanistan. I think we sent about $200. After the surgery, she was so happy to see how beautiful the world was and was in tears when they spoke. And other comments reading, I got my first pair of glasses when I was 7. In 6 months, I went from requiring extra assistance for reading to reading at a 6th grade level. Poor vision can literally change your entire life trajectory. I cannot tell you how much confidence I gained when I could finally see clearly. You also had Kyer speaking to the larger issue, saying, the fact that we have separate healthcare for vision and dental health absolutely baffles me. These two things most definitely are a part of health. Right, like, how many stories do we need to hear about, like, how gum disease can lead to heart attacks and shit like that? And if it wasn't already apparent with these comments, as well as our coverage yesterday, like, vision has such a big impact on our lives and our health. And so yeah, it really baffles me that we treat them like luxury organs. Well, a decent chunk of what we talked about involved the entirety of the world, and of course that involves a lot of places drastically impacted that are very poor. You'd sound like Brennan Cole sharing, saying, I'm an optometric tech here in the States. The amount of people over the age of 45 who come in without having their eyes examined in more than 5 years with visual acuity 20, 40 or higher is terrifying. My job has taught me that we may not have as many bad drivers as we think, but people just plain can't see. Not to mention over the age of 60, with a risk of cataracts, macular degeneration, and glaucoma also affecting people's vision. PSA, get an eye exam at least every couple of years after the age of 50, even if you can see. Not just for your benefit, but people around you. And I can actually kind of speak to that last point. My dad, for the longest time, was like, yeah, my eyes are kind of bad. So as a president, I was like, go get your eyes checked. I feel like you're probably going to need cataract surgery. He went in. He was almost legally blind. He got the surgery. It's pretty much 2020. He's going in for his like 6-month checkup, I think, this week. One, it's life-changing. And two, yeah, I've learned that a lot of people do not realize how horrific their eyes are. But that is where your Wednesday evening, Thursday morning dive into the news is going to end today. But don't worry about missing my stupid face, because remember, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow to break down more news. You on my mind a lot. Don't need no time watch. I don't know how I got you in my pocket spot. Yeah, that's bae. Need you every day. You light my oxygen.